not backing down. This girl is on fire. This girl is on fire. We're walking on fire. These girls are on fire. Put your hands in the air. Oh, oh, oh.
Good evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Monday, February 27, 2017. Today at the White House, Donald Trump met with CEOs of healthcare providers Empire Blue Cross, Aetna, Humana, Cigna, Anthem, Kaiser Permanente, and others regarding changes in the Affordable Care Act. Trump and GOP leaders have pledged to repeal and replace the 2010 healthcare law.
We are going to hopefully work with the Democrats because ultimately we're all people that love this country and we want to do the right thing, including reforms like expanded health care savings accounts, state flexibility, and the ability to purchase across state lines. The state lines are so important for competition. Everybody's wanted to do it for years. What's not to do? So that's going to be very important. I want to thank you all for being here. I want to know, and I want you to know, that it's an honor to do business with you. It's a great honor to have you in the White House. And we look forward to providing health care that is extraordinary, better than any other country anywhere in the world. And we can do that.
Governors from around the U.S. also met with Trump today. They disagree on best approaches for their states and the nation. Governors don't want to see costs passed on to states, but they differ on most other details. Trump says he will announce changes in Obamacare tomorrow evening when he delivers his State of the Nation address. Also in the speech, he's expected to address his Defense Secretary Jim Mattis's plan to defeat IS. Meanwhile, Trump's budget director says Trump's budget blueprint will be submitted to Congress in mid-March. Mick Mulvaney says the blueprint puts a priority on rebuilding the military, securing the border, enforcing laws that are already on the books, and taking care of vets. He also says it eliminates programs that simply don't work. A senior budget official says there will be an increase of about 10% in defense spending and that most domestic agencies will see cuts. In other Trump administration news, an attorney for a voting rights group says President Donald Trump's administration has told her that the federal government no longer plans to challenge Texas's strict voter ID law. Daniel Lang is with the Washington-based Campaign Legal Center.
The way in which the law was designed, it only accepts 7 forms of ID and excluded a number of forms of common ID disproportionately held by minority voters. That includes a number of forms of ID that are given out by the state of Texas, including state public university student IDs and state employment IDs, federal employment IDs. All of these are disproportionately held by minority voters in Texas, and they were all excluded from the list of quote-unquote acceptable IDs. Meanwhile, the legislature went out of its way to include, for example, concealed weapon permits, which are disproportionately held by white voters, and they went out of their way to include that on the list. So that's just some of the evidence that was put forward by the Department of Justice, as well as private plaintiffs, about the discriminatory intent behind this law. And the Department of Justice has decided today to abandon that claim.
The move marks a stark reversal under new Attorney General Jeff Sessions from the Obama White House, which joined a lawsuit against Texas in 2013. A federal appeals court last year ruled that the Texas law discriminated against minorities and the poor, and it ordered changes ahead of the November election.
There are private plaintiffs in this case. We represent Congressman Mark Vesey and a number of other plaintiffs. The Legal Defense Fund and Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Brennan Center for Justice all represent private plaintiffs as well. And we will all continue to argue what we have always argued, which was that this law was enacted with discriminatory intent. The record is complete on this issue. It will be argued tomorrow morning, and the district court will make a decision.
Danielle Long is with the Campaign Legal Center. In other Trump news, a new Siena College poll out today finds only 29% of New Yorkers give Donald Trump a positive job performance. On 9 specific issues, he is rated negatively. The issues include immigration, keeping America safe, working collaboratively with Congress. 72% of New Yorkers have a negative view of how Trump is representing the U.S. on the world stage. Only 34% feel that Trump is doing a good job filling the Supreme Court seat. And only 28% of New Yorkers feel that Trump is moving the country in the right direction. In a blow to the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, Representative Keith Ellison was defeated in his bid for chair of the Democratic National Committee over the weekend. This in favor of centrist Democrat and former Labor Secretary under President Obama, Tom Perez. The two held a news conference after the vote. Here's Tom Perez, followed by Keith Ellison.
We've got actions all over this country today that strengthen numbers, the millions of people that have been coming out since the inauguration to say, Donald Trump, you don't stand for our values. We are marshaling and harnessing that remarkable energy moving forward to build a nation where our values of inclusion, opportunity, optimism, the value of diversity are in place. And so it is great to be here today. We got a lot of work ahead.
That's right, buddy.
We got a lot of things to do, and we're going to do it together. Es un gran honor ser el primer líder latino del Partido Demócrata. Tenemos mucho que hacer en la semana que viene. Vamos a trabajar juntos en estos desafíos, porque hay tanta gente en la comunidad que tiene miedo de que lo que va a ocurrir en los Estados Unidos. Y vamos a mandar un mensaje muy fuerte a ellos que el Partido Demócrata va a apoyarle. El Partido Demócrata va a decir a Donald Trump que usted no tiene nuestros valores. Estamos aquí para la comunidad. Congressman.
Thank you, thank you. Let me be the among the first to congratulate Chairman Tom Perez of the Democratic National Committee. It is a tremendous honor that he has extended an invitation for me to join him in his leadership of the DNC. And I think one thing Tom is clear on, it's going to take all of us. He's our leader, he's our chair, but I think Tom is ready to call on all Americans to help really rebuild the Democratic Party and stand for the values that we all share, which are prosperity for all, respect for all, inclusion of all, and so we're ready to do it. Let me just say this. For anybody who supported me in this race, I want to say thank you. But I want you to support Tom Perez. I want you to put your energy, your time, your resources behind making this the best Democratic National Committee it can possibly be. And I think I can speak for all of the other candidates in the race, Tom. And all of us are united in the idea that Tom is our chair, and we're proud to be part of the DNC. And we're proud to say that this day is the day that the Democrats come together, chart that new course for a bright future for the American people.
Making Ellison his deputy chair is tokenizing Keith Ellison.
Kevin Godstola is managing editor of Shadowproof Press.
Quite frankly, the party allowed and permitted anti-Semitic claims to be made about Keith Ellison. They baited him. They made him seem like an anti-Israel or anti-Semitic congressperson. I believe that it contributed to this idea that Keith Ellison was far left and that the Democratic Party would be taking quite a risk, that he would be a liability if he was running the party. And that marginalized everything. And in fact, the reality is when Keith Ellison started back in November, this campaign, he was the clear front runner. He had wide establishment support. And the new Democrats, these Obama and Clinton Democrats, made this decision to run someone that they could control, because they did not like how Keith Ellison planned to align himself with grassroots forces.
And Ellison was smeared by Chaim Saban, a major Democratic Party funder. Haaretz reported that Saban said Keith Ellison's election as chair of the DNC would be a disaster for the relationship between Jews and the party. Saban said Ellison signaled a crisis between the party's progressives and the centrist pro-Israeli community. Gotsdola.
Yeah. So Chaim Saban is a mega donor of the Democratic Party. He's kind of the Democrats' Sheldon Adelson in a way. And he has a very, very extreme views about how the Democratic Party should align itself with Israel. He is so forceful in that he wanted Hillary Clinton's campaign to particularly target the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement in the U.S., including undercutting their right to protest and engage in such activity. And he's very adamant about shutting down the Sanders wing of the Democratic Party. And that is why you saw someone like Alan Dershowitz go on television the last week before the election of Tom Perez to make such a claim that he would leave the party if Keith Ellison ran the DNC. So it was a clear threat that some of the most prominent Jewish backers, if not just plain pro-Israel forces, were going to take advantage of Keith Ellison's this image that he was a far left person to try and push him down and defeat him.
Meanwhile, after the election of Tom Perez, Donald Trump tweeted congratulations to Perez, who has been named chairman of the DNC. I could not be happier for him or for the Republican Party, Trump tweeted.
I believe that Donald Trump knows exactly how to push the buttons of the Democratic Party. The main issue for people who are concerned about what Democrats do the next few years to challenge Donald Trump is how much bipartisanship will there be? How much compromise will there end up being with the extreme sorts of policies that Donald Trump and his administration will put forward? The Democrats have made it a key feature of their politics to be bipartisan, to compromise early before they even get to the table and start to build consensus around legislation. And so a key issue here is that they don't really act like an opposition party that can protect us, can protect people, marginalized communities, that can act as a counterweight to what Donald Trump is doing. And they have to change that, or else I believe that what we're going to see is a continuation of what has already started as a result of what Bernie Sanders unleashed. There are dozens upon dozens of people who have entered the ranks of precinct committees. They've entered state level offices, county level offices. They've entered parts of the party. They're filtering up. They may not own right now. They may have lost at the top, but they're changing the dynamics within the party quite considerably. And if this Democratic Party has any sort of use for grassroots organizations that are mobilizing in social movements, the party is going to have to respect and stop being so offensive and insulting toward those who are in the party. Stop trying to suppress those forces within that are trying to make the party work for the people.
Kevin Gotsdola is managing editor of Shadowproof Press. He also produces and co-hosts the weekly podcast, Unauthorized Disclosure. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. In other news, as Ben Max of Gotham Gazette tells us, the week ahead in New York City and New York state politics is very busy.
In Albany, state budget hearings continue, and in the city, City Council preliminary budget hearings on the Mayor Bill de Blasio spending plan for the next fiscal year kick off at the end of the week. Before those City Council budget hearings start on Thursday, there are a variety of committee hearings at the City Council Monday through Wednesday, and a full-body stated meeting of the City Council on Wednesday afternoon. This is a typical twice-monthly meeting where new bills are introduced and old bills are voted through the council and passed along to the mayor's desk for signature or veto. Mayor Bill de Blasio has yet to use a veto as mayor. As we look ahead to Thursday, the first City Council budget hearing of the season is the Committee on Finance, which will look at the overall spending plan that de Blasio released in January. Then it will go committee by committee to evaluate spending at different city agencies, where the City Council will hear from agency commissioners and other personnel about their spending priority needs and the amount that de Blasio has budgeted in his initial plan. The budget season lasts for months leading up to a deal between the City Council and the de Blasio administration by the end of June, as July 1st is the start of the new fiscal year in the city. Much of the city budget will depend on the state budget, of course, and that season is underway as well. A new state budget is due by April 1st. And both the city and state are looking to the federal government, where the new Trump administration has cast a big shadow over both city and state budget deliberations. It's still unclear what President Trump and a Republican-led Congress will do to funding for cities like New York. As is typical with budget season, we're also seeing an uptick in the number of press conferences and rallies that push lawmakers for additional funding both at the city and state level. There'll be rallies both at City Hall and in Albany for things like additional MTA funding or to fight cuts to the MTA in the state budget or support for charter schools and a variety of other issues. Closely tied to the budget is something else to watch for this week. On Tuesday afternoon, Mayor Bill de Blasio is expected to outline his new vision for fighting homelessness in the city. Homelessness is one topic that has vexed the de Blasio administration over its 3+ years in office and something that has really become a liability for de Blasio, not to mention the fact that there are over 60,000 New Yorkers sleeping in homeless shelters each night. Over 20,000 of them children. While de Blasio has a fairly extensive homelessness fighting agenda already, he's expected to outline some new elements, including a more locally based, borough-based system of shelters and intakes into the system in an effort to streamline the processes by which individuals and families enter the shelter system and leave it. Other big pieces of fighting homelessness for the de Blasio administration include rental subsidies and eviction protection work. After de Blasio outlines his new plan on Tuesday afternoon, his key commissioner in fighting homelessness, Stephen Banks of the Human Resources Administration, will address a Crane's New York breakfast on Wednesday morning to give even more detail on the administration's plans to reduce the homelessness population in the city. Another highlight of this week in New York politics is Wednesday night when the Brooklyn Republican Party, yes, there's a Republican Party in Brooklyn, will host the two declared Republican candidates for mayor in the first open forum of the 2017 mayoral election, and that's Paul Massey and Michael Faulkner, who have declared their intention to seek the Republican nomination for mayor. Those are some of the highlights of the week ahead in New York politics. We have a lot more detail in our weekly rundown at Gotham Gazette. For WBAI, this is Ben Max.
In other news, the Oscars were given out last night, and the winner for Best Picture was Moonlight.
What you looking at me like that for? What, man? Come on, you just drove down here?
Moonlight triumphed in a year when the Academy was under pressure to honor more diverse films after two consecutive years of Oscars so white when no black actors were nominated.
Who is you, Sharon? A long time trying not to remember. Try to forget all those times.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you gonna be. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
You won't tell him why the other boys kick his ass all the time.
What's wrong?
I'm good.
No, I didn't seem good, and you ain't it.
Remember the last time I saw you?
You
Listen.
To who, Ma? Huh? To you?
Who is you, man? I ain't seen you in like a decade. It's not what I expected. What did you expect?
But there was a snafu last night. The Academy Awards wrongly announced La La Land as the Best Picture winner. The actual winner, of course, Moonlight. Here are presenters Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway.
And the Academy Award for Best Picture.
You're impossible.
Come on. La La Land. Nominations this year and is tied for the most nominated movie in Oscar history, winning 7 Oscars: production design, cinematography, original score, song, directing, actress, and best picture.
Guys, I'm sorry.
No, there's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won best picture.
Moonlight won. This is not a joke.
I'm afraid they read the wrong thing.
This is not a joke. Moonlight has won Best Picture. Moonlight, Best Picture.
Very clearly, even in my dreams, this could not be true. But to hell with dreams. I'm done with it, because this is true. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
And I have to say, and it is true, it's not fake. We've been on the road with these guys for so long, and that was so gracious, so generous of them. My love to La La Land, my love to everybody. Man.
Thank you to the, I don't know what to say. That was really, I'm still not sure this is real, but thank you to the Academy, and it is so humbling to be standing up here with hopefully still the La La crew. No, okay, they're gone. But it's very humbling to be up here. And I think I hope even more than that, that it's inspiring to people, little black boys and brown girls and other folks watching at home who feel marginalized and who take some inspiration from seeing this beautiful group of artists helmed by this amazing talent, my friend Barry Jenkins, standing up here on the stage accepting this top honor.
Barry!
Thank you.
You know, there was a time when I thought this movie was impossible because I couldn't bring it to fruition. I couldn't bring myself to tell another story. And so everybody behind me on the stage said, no, that is not acceptable. So I just want to thank everybody up here behind me, everybody out there in that room, because we didn't do this. You guys chose us. Thank you for the choice. I appreciate it.
And last night there was snickering on Twitter. Billy Crystal tweeted, amazing ending. Wish that had happened on Election Day. Seth MacFarlane chimed in, you know what the problem is? Millions of Academy members voted illegally. Today, though, advocacy groups and others are overjoyed by the Cinderella win of Moonlight, and they're saying, let's forget the snafu and move on, because Moonlight made history in all the right kinds of ways. The coming-of-age story of a gay black youth in a poor Miami neighborhood was made on the tiniest of budgets. It had a mostly black cast. It was seen as the first LGBT-themed movie to win Best Picture in the 89-year history of the award show. Sarah Kate Ellis, president and CEO of GLAAD, said, so often we've heard from Hollywood that writers aren't writing about these things, so having a success at this level takes that narrative out. The reason for the film's success, she said, was simple. It reflects the world we live in today, and countless people can relate to it. Gil Robertson, president of the African American Film Critics Association, said he woke up this morning simply floating over the Moonlight win. He said it's definitely a sign that the tide has turned in Hollywood. The most significant result is what it would signal to up-and-coming filmmakers. What's cool for black filmmakers and filmmakers in general is that this lets them know what's possible. It shows them, wow, I can do this too. That's probably the biggest thing to come out of this. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.